Hello, I'm Barry Daniel, and this is the podcast of the Middle Way Society. Our aim is to encourage a universal approach to living a more integrated, ethical life, avoiding dogma or any appeal to authority. My guest today is Stephen Howlett, who is a senior lecturer at Roehampton University Business School and previously a senior lecture fellow at the Institute for Volunteering Research, where he was involved in many projects looking at the profile of volunteering, the management of volunteers, and policies towards volunteering. He's the co-author of Volunteering and Society in the 21st Century, and he's here to talk to us today about volunteering in general, some of the research projects he's been involved in, and how it might relate to Middle Way. Hello, Stephen. Welcome to the MWS podcast.
Hello, Barry. Thank you very much. Pleased to be here.
Okay, can we begin maybe by you telling us a bit about your background and how you got involved in this field of work?
I'm not unusual when you speak to people who are interested in the voluntary sector and volunteering, in that a lot of people arrive in a fairly circuitous route, actually. I mean, my background is nothing to do with volunteering as such, but at one point in my career, I was involved in the evaluation of regeneration programs.
Okay.
But it was looking at the way in which communities within deprived parts of cities were regenerating themselves, largely through big capital projects. But as I was working on those, I got more and more involved in the community side of it. Then looking at the community groups themselves, how they organized and how they were managed. And it was a short step from there to go to volunteering. Why people got involved in volunteering, why people gave their time free to their communities and to their fellow community members, what they got out of it, how it was structured, how could there be more of it within communities, and largely what it meant in a sort of a changing world where giving time freely seemed to be meaning different things at different times. I just got more and more involved in that, and that's been what I've been doing now for the past, a good many years, maybe 10, 15, 20 years even.
Okay. In terms of volunteering, in the history of it, is it a fairly recent phenomenon, or has it always been part of human society in some form or other?
Oh, I think we can say it's always been a part of human society, Barry. I think that the thing with it is it's one of these things. It's the terminology. It's when you want to call something volunteering and give it a name and then impose a structure on it around that. So if you think of it in terms of people giving their time freely to something other than themselves, then I guess we've always had it. If we wanted to look at what it's looked like in terms of people looking at it and saying that's volunteering, you can find a long, long history. I suppose the starting point of many will be around the Victorian time, when that was the golden age of volunteering. It's always existed before then, but we start to look at the way in which we can recognisably see people involved. And at that point, we sort of look at it in terms of the noblesse oblige, you know, the rich looking after the poor. But at the same time, there's plenty of people who have looked at the idea of friendly societies and the way in which people have involved themselves at a community level. I think they've been the interesting areas that people have looked at volunteering. And I think the other interesting development on that is when we get to much more recent history, when we get to maybe around the Second World War, when everybody assumed that volunteering would dissipate, would fade away with the coming of the welfare state. And actually, as we know, it didn't. And in many ways, it's stronger than ever. So I think it very much depends on how you want to label actions, how you want to look at them, And where I suppose the power lies within those relationships of saying, well, that is somebody who's a volunteer, that's somebody who's just doing something there for their community. We can look, there's a rich history of volunteering.
Okay. And then I'm not sure which question to ask here, but maybe the one you're most comfortable with, either why volunteer or why do people volunteer?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And I remember doing some work with someone called Susan Ellis, who's one of the most knowledgeable people about volunteering in America. And she's got an online journal called eVolunteerism that I helped out with for a while. And she said, Stephen, if you're going to gather articles for this, please don't do anything else on motivations. We know enough. That's all we get is motivations. But it's still a very, very interesting area. And you can find as many reasons for people to get involved as there are volunteers. But I think in general, you would look at it in terms of, okay, there's the very instrumental ones. There's the things like the way in which it's pushed towards younger people as a way of getting skills and those kind of things. The way in which it's talked about in terms of overcoming isolation and loneliness, maybe with older people, getting involved in the community when maybe some of the ties they've had with people around them and the world of work have faded away or been severed. I think there's people who get involved in volunteering as a healing process. If you think about people who maybe, you'd only need to listen to the news, I think, of the way in which people who've gone through tragedy to set up a charity, to do something about it, you know, the way they can feel that they get involved in order to do something. But I think underlying all that, I kind of hinted at it in my last answer, is this. I think people like to get involved. You know, we are social animals, and the way in which we maybe, I don't know, we'll probably talk about this later, but maybe the ways in which we can get involved with other people are shrinking. You know, the sort of commercialization of almost everything we do. Volunteering gives us a chance to be, I don't know, it sounds a little bit crass, I suppose, but be more human, to actually say, look, I'm prepared to get involved. You don't have to pay me. I'm giving my time freely. I want to do something. And I think that's quite a powerful compulsion within people. And when people are looking to volunteer or looking for volunteers, it's always said it's the power of the ask. If you ask people, they will do it. Well, it can't only be the power of the ask. You know, you can't bully people into doing it. They've got to want to do it. The fact you just ask them and they will, I think, is tantamount to that idea that actually people are looking for a chance to in some way get involved with people around them and feel they make a difference in a way that other aspects and facets of their lives maybe don't allow.
Do you think perspective also plays a part, seeing yourself in a bigger picture?
Well, I think that's one of those questions with the what's the cause and what's the effect there. I think, yes, people will. People will get involved because they see themselves, they see something bigger than them. But I think also, and maybe this is, and there is research that shows this, when people have got involved for instrumental versions, I remember when I think about a study I read about younger people who got involved in sports volunteering. And when at the beginning of the study, they were very much asked, why have you got involved in this? And they said, well, because I want to learn the skills of coaching and management and all those kind of things. When they were asked again at the end, they said, those things were still important, but right up behind it, very close second, was, I feel a part of the community. Yeah. So I think, you know, being involved gives you that bigger picture. There is something, there's something here bigger than me. And volunteering can both be a way in, but also a reason for doing it. So I don't think that's an easy one or the other. I think both of those things are important.
And to what degree do you think actually not being paid plays a part in the satisfaction derived from it?
I think that's probably huge, actually. I mean, I don't know. And if you were to say to me, prove it, Stephen, find me the research. I could find you the ones where it's the other way round, and the people who receive the volunteering help. You know, there's lots of it's quite anecdotal, a lot of it, but lots of stories of people who have been in hospital where, you know, somebody's come around to cut the hair or paint the nails or something, and when asked after, well, what does that mean to you, they said that person didn't have to be here. They weren't paid to be here. They were here, you know, they were here because they wanted to, and that means a lot. And I think that goes the other way as well, that people who are volunteering can think to themselves, I did that because I wanted to do that. I didn't do that because I was being paid at the end of it. And I think that does. And I suspect that there'll be a question you'll ask me in a little while about the kind of the effects of volunteering. There is some research that shows that you get something that's been termed the helper's high. Yep. That actually, when you've done something for your fellow people, your community or whatever, you do feel good about it in and of yourself. And I think if you, I don't know. I mean, I'm speculating, but I think if you introduce the money aspect into that, something would be diminished. Yeah, I don't think your helper's high would be there if you were paid for it. The idea that you've done it because you wanted to do it, I think, is a powerful thing.
Yeah, and that makes sense to me too, Stephen. And other benefits?
Well, other benefits, there's all sorts of things. I mean, you know, there are the instrumental ones that I'm talking about, sort of, you know, the way in which volunteering is marketed, if I could start to use those kind of words, it's almost impossible to avoid using them now, towards younger people as ways of getting skills and whatever. But there are the, and I've hinted at them already, there's the socialisation aspects, you know, the way in which people can make friends. There's the healing process of being involved in something. You know, people who volunteer for the Samaritans because something's happened to them. People who volunteer for hospices because they've seen a relative or a child go through cancer or something like that. But there's a broader picture. It goes back to what you said about things that are bigger than yourself. There's the things that maybe you don't recognise in yourself, but we were all recognised in our community. That, again, using the terminology that's in and out of fashion, the social capital. The way in which when we do things, we can add to a stock of something in our communities that's bigger. And if it was to all work perfectly, and it doesn't, because I do recognise there's kind of ghettoisation in all these sort of things, you end up working with people who are different from yourself. You know, volunteering can get you involved. I remember doing a study many years ago now of, it was corporate volunteering. Two stories came out of corporate volunteering study that I did. One was in Northern Ireland, where it was in Belfast, and there was you know, it's a cliche to talk about it in a way, but it was the stories of people who came from different sides of the community, Catholic, Protestants, working in a volunteering project, and literally really saying, I would not have worked with that person if I had not have been in this, and you know, I see they're people like me. It sounds almost too crass to believe that kind of could be something, but you know, those are the stories that are coming out. The other one was it was in a city in the north, and it was a team of people from a bank who'd gone to paint a community centre. Typical kind of a project for corporate volunteering, and they were painting this community centre. And one of them said, we looked up, and there was some. This was like on Wednesday afternoon or something. There were some younger people walking towards them. And they thought, these people should be in the school. Why are they walking towards us? They do look rather threatening, don't they, being in the part of town they were. Yeah. And they said, well, you know, we were a little bit unsure. And these people came up to them and they said, well, what are you doing? And the bank people said, we're painting this community centre. Why are you doing that? Well, we've come from work, you know, and this is our project and whatever. Go on then, give us a go. And these people then, they all got in together and started painting. And that was a powerful story for these people who had spent, you know, most of their time it was a head office actually in a bank, but not engaging or communicating with different parts of their own city and seeing this one part that they went to as threatening. And the first thing they saw when they saw these young people as threatening. And then in the end, you know, they spent an afternoon painting a community centre. And I think those are the kind of benefits. They will go away better for it. Hopefully the younger people will go away with a different impression of what that bank was and whatever, but just different ideas of what community is. And maybe we don't see that individually when we think we're updating our skills or we're making friends, but the more those things go together, I think the better it is for everybody.
Sure, that's a really brilliant example. In terms of drawbacks though, or potential pitfalls that people need to look out for, what would you say there?
Well, you know, I mean, I do fall into that. And when I was in the Institute of Volunteering Research, we always had to be careful we didn't fall into that boosterism, you know, because we liked the projects and we would only say the good things about volunteering. And if we're honest, there are drawbacks. It can take a lot of your time. There will be and always are projects that you'll get involved with that will seem to have a lot of people involved, but will rely on a few people giving a lot of time.
Yeah.
And if you are one of those people that end up giving a lot of time, that can seem like a burden on you. There are studies around volunteering within things like, I mean, it goes back a few years now, but HIV/AIDS, where people talk about burnout because they're in stressful situations. You can be, I think, in stressful situations in volunteering. It's not all, you know, it's the cliche, the elderly lady in the charity shop. Volunteers get involved in all sorts of things. I think again about hospices, where people go in, you know, with children, children's hospices, and they see children pass away, and you know, those are stressful situations.
Sure, yeah.
And I think the other thing, those things can be addressed through kind of the management of volunteers, and that in itself has a danger. But one of the things I think that management needs to do is, because one of the drawbacks is volunteering. Let me take a step back. There's some studies coming out now talking about baby boomers. The way in which people who are coming up to retirement have choices. Even in our more austere times, there will be people who are retiring who have got a decent amount of money in their pockets, who don't have to volunteer. They've got leisure choices. And if we're going to encourage those people to volunteer, those people will need to see that they're making a difference.
Yeah.
And if you go into somewhere and you think, right, I want to help this organisation, and you go in to help them on your first day, and the first thing somebody says to you is, have a cup of tea, sit in the corner, we'll think of something for you to do. You know, that is a drawback to volunteering. It has to be organised around the idea that you know what you're doing, what you are going to be achieving almost. And I think if people don't see that their time is being usefully used, involved, then they'll be a loss to volunteering. And I think that's a drawback in the sense that if we don't see that we are making a difference, it can seem like a waste of time.
So potentially a useful strategy then for the volunteer would be to set boundaries in terms of time, responsibility, expectations as well.
Absolutely. And I think this goes again, I'm being drawn into it already, the sort of the management of volunteering.
Yeah.
The idea that, you know, it can't be an open-ended relationship. It needs to have some boundaries, and good organisations, I think, will help people set those boundaries. We'll set the expectations. We'll let people know that they're not going to be involved. I was a school governor a few years ago, not doing it now, and I sat on a panel to appoint a head teacher. And I got there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and we'd gone through these applications. Me and my fellow volunteers had gone through these applications. We were told then that we'd done it all wrong, that we had to do it a slightly different way, because the way in which we'd come up with a shortlist, the local authority had to make sure that we'd scored everybody, so it's quite evident why people hadn't been picked for interviews and so on and so forth. So we got there at 2 o'clock. By the time we'd redone everything we'd done, it was like 6 o'clock. We then got into shortlisting. This got to 8 o'clock. We then got into arguing about where the what the shortlist was finally going to look like. It got to 10 o'clock. We'd been there 8 hours, and everyone was ready to go home. And the advisor said, hang on, wait a minute, where are you going? We said, we're going home now. And he said, no, now you've got to decide how much you're going to pay your head teacher. And he went through this complicated formula of what we had to do. And I just sort of think to myself, wait a minute, we're volunteers here.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of thing puts people off. You need to know, and organisations need to realise that if you're going to involve people, you wouldn't do it with paid staff. That's the thing. You wouldn't have those expectations of paid staff without saying, right, you're going to get overtime for this, or you're going to get time off in lieu, or whatever. And yet, just because people aren't paid, there's this, oh well, it doesn't really matter, does it? Because they're here with their own free choice. You know, and that does a disservice to volunteering as well, because people drop out and they won't come back.
Yeah, so there's obviously there is a need for some organisation, but I read something that you said that a concern for you is over-formalisation when left unexamined. That can threaten the spirit of volunteering.
Yeah, this is such a difficult thing. I mean, you don't please ask me what define the spirit of volunteering. It's like the judge who said about pornography, isn't it? I don't know what it is, but I know it when I see it, kind of thing. Okay, I'll give you an example of this kind of spirit of volunteering. Lots of students will and have done in their volunteering been befrienders to elderly people. Now,
yeah.
Wednesday afternoon, traditionally your afternoon, you don't have classes. You get involved with the community, you go and you visit an elderly person in the community. You want to go and you want to be their friend. You strike up, I mean, beautiful example, you strike up a relationship, it's intergenerational, you know, you tell them about life as a young person, they tell you about all the experiences of their life, or so on and so forth. You're friends with them. And then the person you are said, oh, my bedroom light is just broken, could you change the light bulb? All of a sudden, I can't do that for you. Why not? Because I might do it wrong. And if I do it wrong, it might catch fire, etc., etc. We have to be able to trust. We have to be proportional on the risks of those kind of things. Actually, if you're going to befriend someone, it isn't just going and talking. You do those little jobs for them. And the kind of the management, and I'm being unfair here because it's not the management, the paraphernalia that's around volunteering now, of the structure of the health and safety and all those kind of things, It's in danger of destroying something. You know, that thing that I'm talking about, that spirit, which is, I'm just going to go around and I'm going to talk to these people because that's what other people do.
Do you think tick boxing in general erodes trust in a sense?
Yes, I do. Yes. And I don't know what the answer to that is, because, you know, as soon as something happens whereby, you know, I shudder to use examples, but we have another Dunblane. where there's a scout master who goes crazy. But those are the exceptions.
Yeah.
And because that happens every now and then doesn't mean to say that thousands upon thousands of people who get involved have to be looked on with suspicion all the time, because all they want to do is give of themselves to help other groups, communities, people, you know, within their local area. So I think we have to be really quite careful about how we look at those issues.
Sure, yeah. Just changing the subject a little bit. You did a research project on volunteering in mental health a few years ago. What conclusions did you draw there? Were there variables that were different in that field to volunteering in general?
No, yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it was more of a literature review of things than it was an empirical. But I think they were the same, but they just had different emphasis. I mean, I remember going and doing a project with somebody who was looking at volunteering with people with more severe mental health, actually. And this person drew a brilliant diagram for me. And what it was if you can imagine this, Barry, it was concentric circles, and then those concentric circles were bisected into segments. And what you did is you plotted where you were on this diagram, and that the middle circle is yourself, and then the next circle out would be immediate family, and then the next one would be friends, the next one would be community, and then if you look at the segments. The segments would be like, for example, one of them would be caring, one of them would be education, one of them would be leisure. And what this person showed me was that if you plot where somebody with mental health issues is on this diagram, that it's very, very restricted. They tend to be within the middle bit, it's them or their immediate carer, and it tends to be that the segment they're in is something to do with their mental health. It will be something around caring, something about the health sector and whatever. And what we were trying to do and what we were looking at was the way in which volunteering can help put people further out in the circles in different segments. And it goes back to, this is why I'm saying it's not that different in some ways, it's just a different emphasis. It goes back to what I was saying about the kind of the social capital ideas, that actually what you can do is you can help people volunteer, and it puts them in a different segment. It puts them with different people, and it broadens the horizon. And when you put underneath that all the other things about the helper's high, but the way in which volunteering can help self-esteem, the way in which volunteering can help communication, then actually that becomes, again, an interesting and powerful way to think about how people with various forms of mental health issues can be helped. However, having said that, I think we then have to link it back to our previous discussion, which is the management. Those things don't just happen. There has to be usually there has to be somebody who's a support worker who helps people within to find the opportunity. Often organizations will be quite happy to take people, but they like to know that there is somebody there who is a support worker who can come and help, that kind of belt and braces approach of looking after volunteers and looking after different volunteers. So those programs themselves have to be structured. But what I think we looked at and what we found was that volunteering is actually a very, very helpful thing. And because, I suspect, now maybe this undermines my argument of earlier, actually, because it's not paid, it's not as treated less seriously, but there's slightly less pressure on it. It's something in the way in which, because it is, again, of this giving of the self, it's not, you're not expecting to be paid, therefore you don't have to do this, you don't have to do that, whatever. As long as it's kind of a managed a project or task or whatever, so you're doing something serious, but in a way that can be, again, sort of structured and used in such a way that the person gains from it, then I think what we find with the projects and the literature review I was doing with different projects is it's very, very helpful for people with mental health issues.
And were you able to implement that research, the widening of this circle?
Well, the trouble with doing research sometimes, you kind of step out of it after that. I mean, I was helping an organisation do it, and this was a few years ago now. I mean, pretty much I think that was what they were looking at when they were developing their supported volunteering projects.
Okay.
So, yes, whether I could... and certainly the university would like it if I could show the impact of that. I don't know, to be honest, because it was quite a few years ago, but I would like to think yes.
Yeah, okay. In the 1980s, I went to live in Germany for a number of years, and I did some volunteering there. At the time, at least, it was a lot easier to get involved in volunteering in the UK than there. However, that seemed to be because the state in Germany was providing a lot more for the things that volunteers did over here in the UK. Do you think governments in the UK have, to an extent, tended to see volunteer organisations taking up the slack to some extent?
Without a doubt, Barry. Yeah. And I think that's not necessarily a bad thing. I try to think about the way into which to get into that answer, actually, because there's all sorts of ways into that. I think if you take the German situation, and, you know, you have the big organisations like Caritas that do the welfare, you know, and they're extremely professionally organised. But I think the Germans as well, I remember going to do a talk over there about Millennium Volunteers, which was the young person's volunteering project. And we kind of got to this impasse because they were saying to me, well, what skills do young people have to have in order to be able to get involved? And I said, well, no, actually, it's what we look at it the other way around, that once they're involved, the participation takes care of itself. You learn it through participation. And the Germans wanted to do it the other way around. The theory came first. You know, you have to measure what you want in order to know that we've done it. And I was saying, no, you don't. You have to get people involved, and then we find out what they were doing. So I think from that point of view, the kind of the German model of volunteering at that time was different. They wanted to talk to us at that point because certainly when they were going through their kind of restructuring of the way in which they got people involved in military service and stepping away from that and giving people other things that they could do rather than joining the army, they were getting more and more involved in volunteering. And I think if you look everywhere, governments are much more involved in volunteering. So I think governments everywhere will be looking at, and partly yes, you know, this is why I didn't really want to lead on this one. Partly yes, it's a money thing. If you can get people to involve, and if volunteer organisations who involve volunteers who are not paid can contribute towards services, then clearly that must be, you know, a good thing because it's saving us money, etc., etc., etc. And a lot of people will look at that and say, yeah, but that's just government stepping away from their responsibility. But if you flip that and say, well, look, but it's about people taking control and being involved, then that's not a bad thing. You know, being involved in your community, small politics with a small p, realising that being involved in any service opens you up to that idea of why are we doing this service? Who are the people who are benefiting from it? Who are the people who are not benefiting from it? It makes you see how you're involved in your community and perhaps make you more political. Actually, that's probably something government doesn't want you to do in some ways, become more political about those sort of things. But, you know, that's a good thing. So I think the argument that volunteers take up slack, yes, but actually that isn't necessarily. And I suppose we could put that in the historical context of there is always a kind of waxing and waning of the boundary between what is volunteering and what is state provision. You know, you can go back and you can look at hospitals, you know, community hospitals or whatever. You can look at education. You could look at all sorts of social services where it hasn't always been the state that's done things.
Yeah.
Voluntary hospitals existed before the welfare state came along and took them over. So what if it goes back again? You know, things don't have to be set in stone. What we need to be happy with is, as a society, we know it's not about exploitation. We know it's about the appropriate involvement of people for whatever reasons, you know, and ultimately, whichever way we choose has got to be better than the other way. And not be ideological about it. You know, it has to be the state, it has to be the private sector, it has to be the third sector. It probably doesn't have to be any of those.
You wrote an article during the Blair years entitled Volunteering for Blair the Third Way. Could you expand on that?
Well, I think that's what I just said, actually.
Okay.
Blair's point at that point, and that died, didn't it? The Third Way died badly. But I think some people said, look, that's just him. When he got into power, he did it by ditching Clause 4. You know, it's a way in which you step back from the state. I have some sympathy with what he was saying because he was saying, look, don't be ideological about this. It doesn't have to be the state. It doesn't have to be the market. And just because, as he was, we are Labour, doesn't mean to say that we don't think sometimes that the private sector is better at delivering. Yeah. And I think the third sector, you know, the third way, third sector, there was almost a line to be drawn between those. There was space in there to say, well, actually, and sometimes we can look and say it's better to have some kind of voluntary contribution to whatever the issue is that we were looking at. At the same time, underpinning this is what I think I've been saying all the way through. We can look at ourselves. What is our role as citizens? Do we sit back and say, I've paid my taxes, I expect the state to do it? Or do we accept that we will pay whoever the provider is because we are now a customer? Or do we say, actually, no, this is a community matter. We're community members. We can do something about that. And the way in which we can do that is to get together, form associations, give our time freely and voluntarily to sort out whatever issue it might be. And what those issues are, I think that's the thing that we need to debate and argue about. Sometimes it will be better for other people. When I say other people, I mean the state or market or whether to deliver things. Sometimes it must be better for people to get together and look at how and what issues are addressed.
Yeah, so that brings up an interesting question. So that volunteer, in the sense you're saying, engenders responsibility, social responsibility, and
I think it has to. But I think you know, I'll be careful on that, because we get a little bit too into the communitarian sort of ideas of it's about rights and responsibilities. Yes. And Alan Michael many years ago said volunteering is the essential act of citizenship, which was a very powerful statement. You'll see that, and if you've read my Blair thing, and if you've read anything else, you've probably seen I've quoted that several times. But a very interesting thing, isn't it? Volunteering is the essential act of citizenship. If I don't volunteer, am I not a citizen? You know, again, it goes back to that, what are we using this for? Right back to where we started this, Barrett. You know, this kind of, what labels do we want to put on this? You know, you have to volunteer. It's the way you show that you're a good citizen. Well, I don't think that's helpful either. And yet, if we do, which we've been saying as we've been talking, if we see ourselves as part of a bigger picture, and we can come to that ourselves without being told to, the Subotnik, you know, the Soviet, the enforced volunteering, you know, Saturday morning, you will volunteer. That's no good. Yeah. If we can encourage people to say that society is bigger than any of us as individuals, and the way in which we can contribute to that through giving our time for free, I think that is, and I can't see how those kind of responsibilities do not follow from that when people get involved. Goes back to what I was saying about the Germans. The Germans say, what do you want to get out of it? And I was saying, well, actually, no, when you learn to participate through participation. Once you get in there, these sort of small steps of getting involved in something, suddenly you see you're part of a bigger picture.
Yep.
You know, you can get involved in other ways, and you should be able to limit those ways if you want to, or do more, do less. But you do, you see yourself as part of something bigger than just yourself.
Oh, I can relate to that scene. Okay, my last question, Stephen. What is your understanding of the middle way, if any? And if you do have an understanding, how might it relate to what we've been talking about today?
Well, Barry, I don't know, actually. I was trying to do a little bit of research when you asked me to do this to see what this is all about. And actually, I think this fits quite nicely, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Really? That kind of middle way between having things done for you or doing everything yourself. You know, that sort of, where am I in the bigger picture? That's what it is, isn't it? You know, what should I contribute to that thing around me? What can I expect of other people? What should other people expect of me? What is, and again, it sounds so self-righteous, but what is the right thing to do? As a person who maybe sits back and reflects upon themselves, the modern world, where they are. What should I do? How should I relate to other people? And it seems to me that kind of middle way is thinking those things through, saying, okay, look, maybe I don't even want to do this, but I should, because this is the way in which we're all going to be better off together. And do you know what? I might actually enjoy it once I've done it. So that's my kind of rapid picture of the way in which I see volunteering relating to all sorts of things, not least of which the middle way that you talk of.
Great. Okay, well, it's been absolutely fascinating talking to you today, Stephen. Thank you very much for giving up your time.
That's great. Thank you very much.
You can find out more about Middle Way Philosophy at www.middlewaysociety.org.